Morning.
Morning.
Welcome to the Naked Englishman podcast. This is the audio diary of behind the scenes of a couple of lazy oiks sitting in bed. Not so lazy. It's 6 o'clock in the morning and we're having a cup of tea. It's the 8th? No, 9th?
Don't ask me.
Yeah. Something, right? Maybe it's the 8th. I can't remember what date it is now. I've got a thing.
It's the 8th now.
It's the day after yesterday and the day before tomorrow. See?
That's it.
And it'll be on the web page. So that's which episode this is. I can't tell you the episode number, but it's, you probably haven't bothered in any of those things anyway. Get on with it, you're saying. Get on with it. Well, we're just sitting in bed and I was had a bit of a sort of a fidgety night last night. But didn't get up. Although could have got up and done a bit of meditation and what have you, but it was had the lovely Julia next to me, so why would you want to leave the bed? She was snoring ahead of. No, she wasn't really. Anyway, that's where we are. I have made Julia a nice cup of tea, and I have made myself a nice cup of tea, although mine is a fruit tea this morning. I just fancied something a bit different. And the weather outside is, well, it looks bright. The sun must be up. Can't quite see it from where I am. There's a little speculation of clouds.
Speculation.
Is that a word?
Speculation is. Speculation.
Yeah, there's a speculation.
Well, apparently it is a word now.
It is a word now. Put it, whoever's in charge.
It's a dappled sky.
Yes, a dappled sky. It's a speculation of clouds. Just tell the organisers of the Oxford English Dictionary to shove in an extra. I'm sure they've got space. Another little page
in
there.
A little bit of extra ink.
Yes. I don't want them to go out of pocket because Vobes has come up with yet another odd word that he occasionally does.
Well, there is a whole Vobesionary.
Ah, yes.
Vobesionary.
Vobesionary. There's another word.
There is another word, which is in the Vobesionary.
Ah, yes.
Oh, I can't even say it now. It's twirly.
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 Twirly. Anyway, welcome aboard. I hope you're sitting comfortably or driving carefully or making a cup of tea with ease and all those different things. I filmed yesterday today's video, which, to ruin it for you, if you keep listening, I shall tell you. Because we've mentioned about this thing about down payments, I've quite got into that. You know, Julia and I are getting a bit fed up of looking online, constantly seeing properties that might be suitable and then finding there's either a too far up north or they're too far west or too far east or they're in the middle of the sea
or they're asking a bit too much money
or they're on cloud nine without a ladder, you know, all these different things,
all the 10,000 leagues under the sea.
And we've been looking at properties that are just sometimes are just fields and sometimes have got perhaps a derelict house and sometimes have got a lovely house anyway. And we thought somebody had said, in fact it was Father John who'd put it this way, that if you put, and I did do a video about this, if you put a down payment on the intention, you know, you can very often, it's telling the universe exactly what you want. So I think there's some logic and sense in this. And we've kind of done it before and we're just carrying on with it. Our friend Sean James Cameron, he was in London. He's now in Wales, and he's got his own little plot and a little house and everything, and he does his videos, which is very good. And when he was in London, he was kind of getting a bit frustrated because he couldn't get on, and he wanted to move back, but he couldn't find the right place. And then he thought, I know what I'll do. I'll just start packing up the house. And he started packing up his flat. Got rid of stuff and started to prepare. And it was, if you like, an instruction to the universe to say, I'm ready. I'm showing you, I'm not just talking about it, I'm actually showing you signs that I'm ready. And that suddenly it popped up. And I had the same thing with trying to sell my dad's house. When my dad died, my sister and I had the duty to sell his house. We had monies that to all the people that dad had left his money to, but we had to realise the selling of the house. So, you know, people were rightly saying, has it sold yet? Can we have our inheritance? Blah, blah, blah. And so we put the house on the market, and would it sell? No, it bloody wouldn't. And this was just after the, or during, or whatever, during the COVID period, and it was just very frustrating. And it was on the market for 18 months, something like that. And one day I said to my sister, she down in Devon, me up here in Sussex, and she hadn't been up, and she was going to come up, and we were going to sprinkle his ashes. We were going to lob his ashes all over the place. And he wanted to be, you know, deposited, but he didn't say where. And so we'd thought of some very nice places and what have you, and I was waiting for her to come up, and she never did. Because she was busy, and I was busy and what have you. And we were waiting for the house to sell, and, you know, there was no more to do with Dad, as it were, other than this duty of lobbing his ashes about.
So gracefully mentioned.
So gracefully done, a bit of sprinklation. So I said to her, I said, do you think, because you're not here, and do you think the house is not selling, it's because we haven't sprinkled his ashes? And she said, well, maybe he's looking down going, I'm not getting rid of that. I said, well, why don't I sprinkle some of his ashes in his garden? He always used to love the garden, and he could be, part of him could be remaining at the garden, sort of thing. I mean, I don't really think the ashes and all that have any real significance whatsoever, because most of it's probably the casket as well. You know, you've got all some, you know, if the place isn't cleaned out when they do these cremations, you've probably got a bit of old Tom Cobley and all sorts of other people swept up in it. You never really know, do you? I'm sure it's not as sterile and as clean for each one. They probably just give it a cursory sweep. Besides which, they're probably doing about half a dozen at the same time anyway. But let's not go down the old conspiracy thing. So I said, I'll go and do that. So I went round and I chucked some of his ash over here and chucked it some over there and all this. And they've still got half of it to go. And we said, well, look, I will wait till when you next come up and we will sprinkle them on the beach, because he used to like to go down onto the beach. So, and people have barbecues down on the beach, certainly, so there's ash down there, so it's not quite, you know. So I did that. Anyway, within 10 days, we had buyers and the house sold.
It was amazing.
It was a very odd thing.
Your father approved.
So, thank you, Dad, wherever you are. And we didn't just lob it and, you know, chuck it. I did it very gracefully. I did it in a tutu with some ballet music. So, that's a nice tea, that is. Thank you.
Yes, thank you. That's a nice tea in my hand.
Thank you, in your hand.
It's a bit hot, though.
Yeah, you want to put it in a cup. Yeah. Sorry, I should have done that.
Yeah.
Maybe anyway, so I think this... Excuse me, you're a bit tired now, even though it was a fidgety night. Now, of course, I feel a bit tired. Typical, isn't it? Yeah, so I think this setting the intention thing and demonstrating... You're demonstrating, not to your friends, not to other people, necessarily, because... I mean, sometimes that's quite good, because you can, as long as you don't go back on it and you feel 100% and you don't feel like you're going to look a prune, but you're demonstrating it more to yourself and the universe. You're telling the universe, I am ready and I am making arrangements, whatever that might be. And I think that is a good thing. So yesterday I made a video a little bit about that. I had done one before where I was talking about it, but this one was a bit more of a demonstration-y type thing. So the land that we're looking for and the opportunities that we would like with it, I'm certain now will materialise. And if it doesn't, I shall come and smack that Father John on the nose. Yes.
I think his cat Monty will have a thing
to say.
Oh,
yes,
about
that's
that.
Probably true. He's guarded by a month old tabby. What is it?
He's probably 2 months
Bengali cat or something.
Yes, Bengal. Bengal cross.
A Bengal cross. Mm-hmm. Very angry cat. I've noticed my battery is running out on this. So I've done that video yesterday. I won't spoil what's in it, so you can go and have a watch of it, of course. And then I interviewed good old, dear old Mark Byford.
The bowler hat farmer.
So that will go out in the afternoon. So today's videos are all done, which is rather nice. Nice to have all that sort of done. Julia came over. We did another bit from the book, ran through. I think we've got a chapter and a half and an epilogue and the preface for her to look at. Oh, gosh, sorry. So there's that. So not much. And then I can get the proofreaders to do it. I was hoping that by the end of this week. So it may well be done. But you've not been able to be free. We've had things to sort out. You've been, you know, like yesterday, you didn't get over till 8-ish.
Yeah, goodness.
Because of just complications, which we needn't bore you with yet again and again and again.
This is the story of my life.
Been working on the pipe book. A little bit on more on that, which is good. So things are ticking along, which is rather jolly. And today, well, more of the same, really. I've got to round the year of the farm, which actually I think must be aimed at school children, I don't know, because of the way it's been written. It seems to be written not for small children, but for children in the 1940s, I suppose, to give them an indication of what farm life was. I don't know. It's just that maybe that was just the style of the time. Anyway, 21 November. I know we're not in November, but I'm curious because hopefully we'll be on the land by November. If we can find the right place and we get all the deeds and everything else, you know, these things take forever. So I'm looking at that sort of period because we'd like to know what traditionally was done. Not that necessarily we can follow that because we may not be able to afford horses or plough, you know, not an old-fashioned plough or all the bits and bobs. But it's just nice to know what was going on the land as we decide how we are going to do ours. And it says here, November is a kind of half-breed month, being sometimes autumn and sometimes winter, according to the state of the weather. The farmer always hopes that it will be the former, so that he can continue with such October jobs as may be still unfinished. But now he'll have all his mangolds lifted and stored away from the frost. I wonder if people still grow mangolds. Mm. You never hear of them as a crop, do you? But he'll usually have some sugar beet. Well, we do hear about that. The most likely reason why there are some beets still in the field is that the farmer cannot get them away from the farm. Ah, yes. Why can't you get your sugar beet from the farm, Mr. 19... I think this was 57, this was. You see, for nearly 2 months, every sugar beet grower in England has been harvesting his crop. So now the beet are arriving at the sugar factories faster than can be dealt with. Well, that makes sense, I suppose. And there is a shortage in many railway trucks. Oh, there is a shortage of railway trucks. I don't suppose that's the case these days. Why didn't the farmers begin to lift their beet earlier and so spread out the railway and factory work over a longer period? Well, simply because, you idiot, the beet was not ripe enough to harvest until about the last week of September. Dodo. As the... It doesn't actually say that.
Really?
Yeah, really. As with most farm jobs, every farmer must harvest his beet around the same date. Sugar beet can stand a fair amount of frost without taking much harm, so the farmer doesn't worry. He just waits until he receives permission from the sugar factory to send another truckload. Sounds also very civilised, doesn't it? I'm sure it isn't like that in real life. It's like, we've got some sugar, but you're going to bloody take them or what? Anyway, he waits for another truckload of beet and word from the local railway station that there is an empty truck available. I say, old chap, I don't know if you want to take your sugar beet to the factory, but we do have a spare empty truck. Do you really? Yes, we really do. How splendid. Would you like to take advantage of it? Yes, I think so. Marvellous. Shall we say 9 o'clock? You say whatever you damn well like. I shall be there at 7. Oh dear, I'm not sure I'm up at 7, usually having breakfast. Well, I've got to get these off, and then I'm going to market. Oh dear, Daphne will be upset. No, never mind, I'll make sure I'm there. I'll bring the key. Well, that's a bloody good idea. Otherwise, what would we have to do? Well, you'd have to throw it over the fence, which is most inconvenient. And besides which, some of that sugar beet's a bit bouncy, isn't it? It is bouncy, yes. Well, I don't want it bouncing on the track. Might have an awful accident. Yes, that would be awful. Right, I'll see you at 7 then. Thank you. Toodle-pip, toodle-pip. That's the 1940. That you had a glimpse there. There was like a time worm. In which,
a time worm.
Yes, in which...
Time wormhole.
Exactly. And the viewer there with the blindfold on... The viewer there with the blindfold on was whisked back in time for one moment, and it was such a believable scene. You could almost hear the steam escaping from the engine. So there we are. Especially added realistic sound effects in today's episode. So he waits there, so polite. All the other work on the farm stops, except with the livestock, and everybody hurries to lift a load to the truck of the beet as quickly as possible. Words not necessarily read correctly. Meantime, this is where it gets, you know, a bit so sinister now. Meantime, on the other side of the world, in the evil lands, the wheat sowing continues when the weather permits. Sometimes in November it rains day after day, and the ploughed land is like a mud pond, much too wet to sow wheat. The tractor wheels sink in, and the tractor cannot pull its harrows. The horses can plod along very slowly, but the effort required to pull their feet out of the mud reduces the pulling power. Oh, how we laugh.
I thought you read that bit before.
I read it to you, but not on this.
Ah.
But the chief reason why you cannot sow wheat when the ground is sodden with rain is that no implement will bury the seed. And after all, that seed has got to go down 45 metres, so you need a bloody great drill. The soil is like wet porridge, though not as tasty. The drill clogs up and the harrows make streaks in the ground. Instead of pulling loose soil over the seed, which has been scattered by the broadcast, by the BBC. Sometimes, instead of rain, November brings sharp frosts. Ow! Just cut myself on that one. These also stop the wheat sowing because the topsoil is frozen like ard cement, and no surface implement will break it.
I've got a pickaxe, John. Any good?
You can try it, mate.
Oh, very good. What? Yeah. It's not doing very good.
Try it again, mate.
Thanks. Harold, did I call you?
Can't remember now.
Oh, dear. It's so hard, it's bounced off. Bounced off and gone through my greenhouse.
You said it had gone through your greenhouse before we heard the crash.
Yes. That's to do with the sound bending.
Mercy. Bit like you when you're picking up daisies.
Now, don't you come at me when I'm picking up daisies. I know your sort.
And you leave me out of that, thank you. I didn't spend 14 years in Pentonville.
Didn't you?
No. 15. Mm. Anyway, we're not really getting very far in today's episode. I'll just get to the end of this paragraph and then I'll let you go. For many of you will have switched off thinking this, the levity level on this episode is in the red. First thing in the morning, what is he like? Anyway, in hilly country... Hello! Hello! Hello!
Hello, I'm Hilly.
Hello,
What's the matter? What can I do for you?
Ah, hello, Hilly. I'm over.
Over, Hilly?
Yes, I'm afraid it's all over. I'm not having any more to do with you. I'm over, Hilly. In hilly country, districts such as the Downland in southern England, that'd be near us then, it may happen, that one farmer is able to sow wheat, see, while his neighbour cannot. I can't do it. I don't know how to, my arms have dropped off. You won't be able to sow wheat then, will you? Stupid fool, you in that bloody combine harvester, you're not supposed to stick your hand in it. I didn't mean to, I got drawn in.
You're only supposed to blow the ruddy doors off.
That's right.
He blew his arms off instead, didn't he?
He did. Anyway, it all depends on which way the farm slopes. If the field wheat is on the ridge of a downland, which slopes towards the south, that is, towards the sun will thawed out the frost day, night frost by 9 o'clock in the morning. And the wheat sowing can then begin. But on the other side of the valley, where the land slopes to the north, perhaps a high wood at the back of the wheat field, the land will be in the shade all day. You're doomed, Captain Mannering, and never will it thaw out. When that sort of thing happens, the farmer on the south slope reckons that he's stolen a march on his neighbour. I'm just saying...
I thought we had Alistair Sim in here for a second then.
Ah, yes, good old Alistair Sim. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I said I'd come to the end of that passage, and I did come to the end of that passage. In fact, that's the same amount I read to Julia the other day, not on here, and we still don't know what happens next. Will he survive? Will that farmer survive the round the year on the farm, or will he go to the wall and do a little bit of rendering? And just fix that little sort of brick that was loose on the top. Who knows?
Yeah, it's been bothering him for ages.
Do tune in again, ladies and gentlemen, those of a nervous disposition, and find out what happens in the next thrilling, scintillating, and speculation episode of the Naked Nudie Doody Englishman. Sorry for the lack of serious tone in today's episode.
Yeah, even Mojo's given us a look of disdain.
He has given us a huge look. He said, I wrote the script for yesterday and I'm very upset that you have not stuck to it.
Meow. What's the point in my job?
Yes, and he has a hell of a job on that typewriter, I can tell you. Anyway, until next time, goodbye.
Daddy bye.